Welcome back to After the Buzzer. I am Gordy Jones. Unfortunately, Mike Gross is on the injured list and will not be with us this evening. But joining us on the phone line from the swimming pool at Drexel University is Aaron Bracey, a longtime writer, freelancer, et cetera, in the Philadelphia market. And he has a new website called BigFiveHoops.com that he just launched in November. And he is also working on a book about the 2003-2004 St. Joseph's Hawks, who, for those who might not remember, went 30-2 and advanced all the way to the Elite Eight, where they lost on a buzzer shot to Oklahoma State. That was the team that was coached by Phil Martelli and had Jameer Nelson as its star player. So, Aaron, welcome to the big broadcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Gordy. So excited to be here, and hope you can hear me okay.
Yeah.
I did not bring my swimming trunks to the basketball game, but I tried to find a place where I could talk somewhat, where the noise wasn't too noisy. The media room had PTI blasting, and the basketball court, obviously, is pretty noisy. It seems pretty quiet and serene down here, so hopefully this is a good place.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, Aaron's there to cover the Drexel-Stony Brook game tonight. So, Aaron, I read your column that's on Big5Hoops.com about the impetus behind the website, which was kind of multifaceted. It was really kind of an interesting story you told about when you yourself were a St. Joe's undergrad. You were working for the radio station at the college, and you, on a whim, just kind of went in to talk to Phil Martelli and without an appointment, and he granted you an audience, and you kind of, the rest is history, I guess. And the other part was kind of a personal thing where writing is kind of therapeutic for you. I wonder if you could just talk about what went into the launch of this site.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, Gordy. You know, the backstory on that is that I grew up reading Bill Lyon in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mm-hmm. Bill Lyon was kind of like my idol. Like, I wanted to be Bill Lyon. That's what I wanted to be in life.
Yes.
And so I went to St. Joe's, and I thought I would major in journalism. And when I got there, I realized that I had to take all these literature courses because they didn't really have a quote-unquote journalism major.
Right.
So I quickly realized that if I wanted to major in journalism, I had to do stuff on campus. So I signed up for the student newspaper. I signed up for the student radio. I worked in the sports information office. And so my first role was as a student radio. I walked in the student radio. I'm like, hey, I want to do student radio. They're like, yeah, you can't be great. Well, the student radio signal at St. Joseph's University at that time literally went just to the cafeteria.
Right.
So if you were having lunch or dinner, you could hear my broadcast of the game, or if I was doing a show,
right.
But if you were anywhere else on campus, you could not hear it. But, you know, I was living my dream, and so I think I did the first basketball game on radio. It was Phil Martelli's first game at the University of Delaware in his first year, 1995-96 season. So after the game, I'm like, you know, gosh, this is just what I want to do. I'm not writing, but I'm doing sports journalism. I'm doing just what I wanted. I'm Bill Lyon. I like, well, if Bill Lyon was here, he'd probably want to go interview Phil Martelli after the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day after the game, I walked into Phil Martelli's office. I didn't have an appointment. I just was like, hey, I'm going to go talk to Phil Martelli. I was a 19-year-old college student. I didn't have anything but you know, spunk and guts. And I walked into his office. His secretary, Claire Ariano, was there, and I said, hey, Claire, Aaron Bracey, I'm the sports director of the St. Joseph's radio station, and I'd like to talk to Phil Martelli about the Delaware game. And she's like, okay, do you have an appointment? And I said, no, I don't have an appointment. Did I need one? And she's like, okay. She's like, well, Phil's in his office. Let me go talk to him.
Okay.
So she goes into his office. And she comes out, and she's like, okay, he'll be with you in 10 minutes.
God love him. God love him.
So I sit in there, and so I go in there. I don't remember. I do remember being in the office. I don't remember what we talked about, but, you know, I was doing what I wanted to do my whole life, which was, you know, go in and interview a coach after a game. And I asked him questions about the game, and he answered the questions. And I probably went back and went on my show, which could be heard just in the, you know, in the campus cafeteria, and I talked about what we had talked about, and, you know, I tell that story, and I've told Phil this too, and I really think, and I told him I thank him, because had he said no to me, I don't know that I would have been encouraged to pursue my dream of sports journalism. Now, my gut feeling is yes, I would have continued on, but doing that just propelled my interest and propelled my dream to do this, and I'm forever grateful to Phil Martelli for saying yes to me that day.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned also in your column that writing has served a therapeutic purpose. most recently because you lost your dad and also kind of your surrogate dad, the one who raised you after your parents divorced when you were very young. So this is also kind of a therapeutic thing for you lately.
Yeah, for sure, Gordy. And I started the website in November, and within 9 months, my stepfather, who was more like a father to me than anything, passed away in October. Mm-hmm. And my dad, my birth father, who I also had a relationship with, passed away the previous December. So in 9 months, I lost the two men who probably had the most influence on my life, and really was quite frankly was having a difficult time with it, and just trying to figure out where to go. And I'd wake up in the morning every day, and it was tough. I just was kind of lost, quite frankly. And and I got thinking, like, hey, what do I love to do? And I really started thinking about seizing the moment, because life is short, life is precious. I just lost these two important people in my life, and writing and sports writing has always been important to me. It's always was a dream of mine to do growing up, and I was watching the Penn Villanova game in November, and I just was thinking how much I missed covering college basketball, how much I missed the Palestra, and it hit me right then and there. I was like, I want to get back to doing what I love, and I love doing it. And also, I also felt like it would redirect my, my thinking and take my mind off of the loss that I was feeling and the sadness that I was feeling, and redirect it in a way that would be energetic and positive and do things that I love to do. And so I remember running upstairs from the living room into my office and being like, big5hoops.com, that's it. Just going right on the domain and like, do they have it? And they had big5hoops.com. I took out my credit card, I bought the site, and I'm like, okay, now what? And from there, I started the website, I threw it together, and then I got in touch with a friend, Joe Fedorowicz, who helped me in my previous iteration when I had a website called Fill a Hoops back in 2010 to 2014. Mm-hmm. And he's a real web savvy person, and he helped me design the site and got me going. And I just kind of took the ball and run with it. So that's the site. And then that led to the book, which, we can talk about, or we can talk more about the college basketball scene. I don't want to monopolize all the talking here.
No, it's much better if you're doing the talking than I, trust me on this. This is, But here's the other thing that I've always thought and admired about you. You need to be busy. You need to multitask. Now, you work as an academic designer at McGraw-Hill now, but in other times in your life, I know you've been a teacher, you've been a soccer ref, I know you and your wife have a few kids. You've always needed and you've strung for AP. I know back in the day you worked at the Trenton paper, you worked at the Camden paper. You need to be busy, right? Correct?
Yeah, I'm one of those people, like, I'm good at multitasking. I'm good at organization. Mm-hmm. And it's what I like to do. I don't like to be idle. I like to keep myself busy. Now, sometimes I can overdo it at times, but I try to balance, and I try to really make time for everything. Make time for my family. Make time for the things that I'm passionate about, such as covering college basketball, such as refereeing soccer, which I still do. And obviously, I have my full-time job, which I work for McGraw-Hill. I did teach for 11 years, and it just really works out. And I am a long-time freelancer, as you know, for the Associated Press. I love doing that. I love covering the games. It's funny. I still love every game that I cover, even tonight, I still get excited to do it. And as long as I have that excitement and that passion, I don't see stopping. And I think, having that zest for something and that passion for something, it's really important in life, because, we can kind of be run down with that. This is not, a self-help podcast, I know. but we can get, just my own two cents, we can get bogged down with things. And I think finding things that you really love, that you're passionate about, I really think it helps you have that excitement every morning. And quite frankly, Gordy, that's what I was kind of missing in that little time period where I was just kind of lost a little bit. I didn't have that waking up every morning excited, passionate, zest for life, because I was kind of lost. I was sad. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't have direction in my life. I had lost these two important figures and role models, and mm-hmm. you know, and so yeah, it's been I like keeping busy. I do enjoy doing a lot of things, and you know, it's just I've always been kind of wired that way, I guess.
Well, that's good. That's good on you, man, because I've always liked that about you. And the enthusiasm part, that was actually one of the things that I was going to mention to you too. I always sense that about you, that you're always enthusiastic about what you're doing, and that's great. God love you for that, really.
You know what's funny? I always think about this. When I was just out of college, I wanted to get into sports journalism full-time, which I ended up doing, but I was freelancing at the time for the Associated Press, and Jay Bonfatti, who was kind of in charge of the Philadelphia Bureau, mm-hmm. was assigning me to Phillies and Flyers and 76ers and college basketball. I loved it. It's mm-hmm. exactly what I wanted to do. He called me. He said, "Hey, listen, I got this great job for you down in Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm single at the time, and mm-hmm. I love to play golf." He's like, "You can play golf during the day. You can work at night." It was for CBS Sportsline. He's like, mm-hmm. "They're putting together this new website. They need guys who can just go. You're gonna help like edit their content, put together the content. Mm-hmm. It's a great job. You're gonna love it." He's like, "I've been hanging around locker rooms my whole life. You know, you don't want to hang around locker rooms." And so, like, I thought about it. It was like, I mean, Gordy, like, I could have gone down to Florida. Mm-hmm. I loved playing golf. Great weather. I was single at the time. Mm-hmm. But I thought about what he said, and I was like, you know what? Like, I really do like being around locker rooms. I really do. that's what I always, like, wanted to do. Like, I like, you know, I like talking to players. I like watching the games. Like, mm-hmm. You know, and then so, like, I did end up kind of doing that. I ended up also working a desk job at the Courier Post as sports copy editor, right. And I worked as a sports editor at Trentonian. And but there's nothing for me that compares to just being out at a game, you know, telling a story. Like, I think we all have, like, it's so interesting. Like, I find sports so interesting, and just, like, I feel like everybody has a story. Like, every game I do, mm-hmm. I try to research as much as I can, and I like to look at the bios and try mm-hmm. and find out about the players. And I just, mm-hmm. I don't know, I just think it's really interesting, and I've always enjoyed it, and, you know, always passionate about it. And, I just love doing it.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. Here's an example of that. The other week, I wanted to talk to Kelly Oubre after a game, and I looked on his leg as he was getting dressed in his locker, and he had a Bruce Lee tattoo. So I asked him about it, and he kind of took it and ran with it. I'm like thinking, well, this is great. This just grew out of nothing, and here I have like a whole angle to work with. And it's like, and I absolutely agree with what you're saying. You just, like, when you hit on something like that just kind of resonates with you and with your subject, you just really feel like, okay, I accomplished something today. You know what I'm saying?
And it's cool because you found out something a little bit different too, right. You know, and it's like a little detail can lead to a great story. And just to kind of branch off of that, so I did my 56th interview today.
Right.
I did 55, 56 for the book, the 2003-04 mm-hmm. St. Joe's book with Dick Hoops-Weiss and Neil Hartman.
Oh, right.
So, like, and Phil Martelli, who I've talked to for the book but not in depth yet, he's like, gosh, he's like, how do you even get so many interviews? Like, what? Who are you talking to? But it's kind of like, I want to find out, like, every detail I possibly can find out.
Right.
And it's like, I'm talking to as many people as I can because I want to be able to tell the story mm-hmm. in the most minute detail and the most interesting angles. And I don't want to leave any stone unturned. It's kind of like your tattoo story mm-hmm. with Kelly Oubre. Like, you know, that probably led to this cool story about Bruce Lee or his relationship yeah. or why he got the tattoo. It's like,
right.
And little things like that. If you can find something like that,
right.
Because especially nowadays, that's harder, as you know. Like, it used to be a lot easier, but now, you know, everything, all the interviews, generally speaking, are broadcast publicly. So it's not like, mm-hmm. you know, and everything's televised. So the players and the coaches are less reticent to say something
mm-hmm.
like interesting, controversial, different, because, you know, everything is like more like sound bites now, and that's yep. disappointing.
Yep.
But you gotta go past that, and you can find stories, as you have with the tattoo and as I'm doing with the book, and like it's just been so exciting to learn so much about that season and that team, and mm-hmm. you kind of relive that. It's been mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been very exciting and thrilling.
Yeah. Before we talk a little more about the book, I did want to just loop back about just the Big Five as it stands today. You're at a game, Drexel is 18-11, but the teams within the Big Five, Nova is 16-12, your alma mater, St. Joe's, is 17-11, LaSalle is 14-15, Temple is 11-17, and Penn is 10-16. I know you wrote a column recently about how it's really going to take something dramatic for one of these teams to break through and get into NCAAs. Did you see that happening? Is that possible or likely, or how do you feel about that?
Well, again, this is, you mentioned those records. I mean, this is just, it's been another very disappointing season for the Philadelphia Big Five. I mean, this is a storied basketball tradition. Mm-hmm. And last year was the first year since 1976 that there was not a team in the NCAA tournament that represented the Big Five. And this season, this could be the second straight season without an NCAA tournament team. So basically, it's really come down to this. Villanova has to win two of its final three regular season games and a game in the Big East tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. Now, they have a very tough schedule in their last three regular season games. They're going to play at Providence on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They're going to play at Seton Hall on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to host Creighton, which is number 12 in the country, on Saturday. So it's not an easy ask by any means from Villanova. It's been a very up and down season. They actually are playing probably their best basketball at the right time right now. If I had to put odds on it, I would probably say 50-50 right now for them to do it, which I think is actually a lot higher than I thought 2-3 weeks ago. So I think Villanova has a halfway chance to make the tournament. They did not make the tournament last year, which obviously is not making people happy on the main line who are used to success. Right. Drexel has a really, really good basketball team. Might be, other than Villanova, probably the most consistent team in the city, if not the best team after Villanova. But they're playing in a one-bid league, the Coastal Athletic Conference, which is really a very good league. There's a lot of really good teams, so they have a really good chance to make a run in the conference tournament, but it's a tough conference. It really is. So their only chance of getting to the NCAA tournament is to win their conference tournament, which I'd probably give about a 25% chance at this point, and that's not a slight to them. I think it's more so that speaks to their conference and how competitive it is. There's Drexel, for instance. They have two regular season games left, and they can finish anywhere from second to seventh in just with two games.
Wow.
And then there's the other team in the city, which has a minor chance, is you mentioned my alma mater, St. Joseph's. They have a great offense, Gordy, but their defense, like, they can score with anybody, but anybody can score on them, if that makes any sense. And so they're going to be like an 8-9 seed in the conference tournament. It's going to take a real, like, almost miraculous run to win four games in 5 days at Brooklyn. I do not see that happening. Give them a very slim chance. LaSalle is playing better. They're going to be like a 13 or 14 seed out of 15. Really probably a less than 1% chance of making the conference tournament. Having said that, I don't think there's going to be anyone that wants to play Fran Dunphy coach team in the tournament, because they're dangerous. But just don't have the depth or talent to really make a legitimate run. And then Penn has already been eliminated from Ivy League contention, and Temple is completely rebuilding. They've won three straight, which is encouraging, but they're going to be like a 13 or 14 seed in their conference tournament. So, Villanova and Drexel are probably your two best chances, and I don't give either a better than 50% chance. So it could be another year without a Big Five team in the NCAA tournament, which is really disappointing.
You mentioned the impatience at Villanova. This is Kyle Neptune's second year as the coach, replacing Jay Wright. How hot is his seat at this point?
So I think after losing to all three teams, he lost all three games in the Big Five. I think his seat was like burning. And then they kind of recovered, and they won some games to start out the Big East Conference. So I would say his seat was just warm. And right now, I think he's like stable. They played really well. Their defense has been really good. But I will say, if they don't make the tournament, I think fans at Villanova are going to be calling for a new coach. Now, I'll say this, I think anyone who stepped into Jay Wright's footsteps, following Jay Wright, was going to be an impossible task for anyone. Jay Wright is probably, when he left college basketball, he was probably on the short list top two or three coaches in college basketball, Hall of Fame coach, mm-hmm. obviously a great record. So it's going to be tough for anyone. And, Jay is still involved with the program. He's spoken very highly of Kyle Neptune. I think Kyle has made some mistakes this season, some in-game mistakes. Now, whether that's on the players, whether that's on him. But overall, I have to say, Gordy, I think he's done a really good job, mm-hmm. Especially if, like, keeping this team together. Like, and especially in the last month, like, almost every game they've been playing has mm-hmm. been more or less a must-win. And they played their best basketball in the most intense pressure. Mm-hmm. So for me, that says a lot about a coach being able to keep a team together. Mm-hmm. And I would generally say he's done a very good job this year. I think the expectations are a little bit out of whack, but that's understandable, right? You win mm-hmm. a national championship in 2016, national championship in 2018. You know, you make the Final Four in 2022. Like, you are going to have high expectations, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I will never tell a fan, like, not to have expectations, I will never tell a fan how to think, how to act, because, like, I think, like, you know, that's what, if I'm Villanova, like, you want that passion. Mm-hmm. You want the high expectations. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be somewhere where they don't care. Mm-hmm. But it can be, you know, your seat can get hot quickly if you lose games, as Kyle did. And to his credit, you know, he has never made excuses. You know, it's very cliche-ish, but, you know, he talks about getting better each day, and I think they have got better, and mm-hmm. I give him credit for that. So I don't think the story is written. I think you really have to wait till after the season to give a full evaluation, mm-hmm. but right now I would say I think he's done a good job.
Okay. Well, we'll see how it works out for Kyle. I crossed paths with him years and years ago when he was playing at Lehigh and I was working in Allentown. So I know him just a little bit, but obviously it's tough to be the guy to follow the guy. You know, it's no matter where you are, you know, like that's a real challenge. But let's talk about your book a little bit. As you said, you're 56 interviews in, and I know the other day you told me that you wanted to save Phil Martelli to be the last one. I mean, what is your timeline on this? When do you hope to start plunging in, and when do you hope to talk to Phil? When do you hope to start writing? What's the plan?
Yeah, so I started out by going through each game, 32 mm-hmm. games, mm-hmm. and did deep dive research on each game. And in the meantime, I was kind of doing some interviews with people like kind of that surrounded the team that I kind of felt like would be amenable to talking to me. So I was kind of doing like little interviews here and there. Mm-hmm. So once I finished up my research, which was in the last couple of weeks, I really started turning up the notch on the interviews and started talking to more of the players, because I wanted to make sure that I really understood the games before talking. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to have a good sense of the season before talking to some of the key players and such. Mm-hmm. But I did want to secure Jameer. I did talk to Jameer Nelson early in the process, because I kind of felt like, hey, if Jameer says no to me, like, not that I couldn't do the book, but mm-hmm. it would kind of be a blow. So I wanted to talk to Jameer. I talked to Phil early on and told him what I was doing, mm-hmm. and said, hey, listen, this is what I'm doing. Love to have you involved. But I don't want to really, first of all, he's coaching right now at Michigan, so he's busy. Mm-hmm. But I said, I want to wait until like more like the end of the process mm-hmm. to talk to you, like kind of on the record, so that I kind of have a better sense of what to ask you, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't kind of know, but the right. more I learn, the more things I'm like, oh, I got to ask Phil about this. So my timeline is basically to just continue my interviews. I'm going to wait until after the season to talk to Phil and a couple other people, like Dwayne Lee, who was on that team as an assistant coach at mm-hmm. George Washington. Dwayne Jones is assistant coach at St. Joe's. I kind of want to wait until after the season when mm-hmm. those guys are not under the stress of the everyday. So my hope is by the end of April to have my research and interviews wrapped up. I would like to write in May, June, July. Mm-hmm. My plan is to write 90 to 100,000 words. I'm going to try and I kind of mapped it out. If I do that, I could do – you know, if I do like a couple thousand words a night, which that's might be asking a lot, but say five days a week. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, 10,000 words a week. So that's like 9 weeks. If everything goes smoothly, give it a couple weeks. So I'm figuring 12 weeks. I'm figuring 3 months to write, okay. which would take me to the end of July. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm going to, during the writing process, I'm going to start really pushing hard for a publisher. I do not have a publisher at this point. Mm-hmm. I do hope to secure one. I do think that the book and the amount of work and the interviews and the research that I put in and the story itself is going to warrant some interest. Mm-hmm. At least that's my hope. Mm-hmm. Absolute worst case scenario is there's plenty of opportunities for self-publication, which that's really not my hope, not my goal. Mm-hmm. But that's a fail-safe plan. So my ideal timeline would be to get this in the hand of a publisher at the end of July, mm-hmm. and then at the start of next college basketball season to have a book out.
That'd be great.
It would be the 21st anniversary of that team, not the 20th, which would be ideal, but it still would be in the 20th calendar year, which would be cool. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario, if that's too aggressive of a timeline, I feel like March Madness 2025 mm-hmm. would also be a good time to unveil it, considering mm-hmm. the run they made to the Elite Eight in 2004. So that's kind of where my head's at with, mm-hmm. with my timeline.
And I think you told me the other day that you're still undecided about a title, correct?
So I've written down like five titles, mm-hmm. and I kind of have the subtitle in my mind, mm-hmm. But I want to wait because I kind of feel like, you know, this is going to sound weird in comparison, but like my wife and I, when we had our children, mm-hmm. we did not pick out a name until we saw them.
Oh, wow. So like, that's neat.
When we saw our kids, we kind of, you know, we felt like it would come to us, like it'd be like a God, like a, you know, godsend. Uh-huh. And so I'm kind of feeling the same way with the book, that I want to wait until after I've completed all my research and all my interviews and then like kind of take a walk and really try and process mm-hmm. what I've heard, what I've learned, and really see if I can hammer that headline. That's my newspaper report. Mm-hmm. Hammer that title, because I think obviously a real strong title is obviously key to selling a mm-hmm. a book. Again, I have some ideas, but it would be premature for me to disclose them because mm-hmm. I don't know everything yet. That yeah. makes sense.
So I don't want you to give away too much, but what are some of the unexpected anecdotes that you've come across so far?
Yeah, there's been so much. I mean, oh gosh, let's see. You know, one of the cool things, I'm trying to think, one of the cool things I learned yesterday from Phil Martelli's secretary. Now, this isn't like the greatest story ever, but Phil Martelli in 2004 did not have a computer in his office. So if you emailed Phil Martelli, uh-huh. his secretary would print out his emails every day, mm-hmm. and she would hand deliver his emails on a printout to his office.
Oh my God.
When Phil would get there, he would handwrite responses to every email mm-hmm. or every letter or every anything he got, mm-hmm. and he would return those emails like a pile of paper to his secretary.
Oh my God.
She would type the emails back mm-hmm. to the people, and he responded to every message. God, and then the other thing is, he was just a paper pencil guy, and I can kind of relate to that, but he would have a schedule, and she would hand him a piece of paper on a Friday that would have his schedule for the next 2 weeks. It would be just, it would all be handwritten. Oh, and it would be like Thursday, 10 to 11 a.m., you know, interview with, you know, Basketball Coach Association, you know.
Right.
So 11:30 to... And it was just fascinating, just like, just mm-hmm. the way that is. But, you know, some of the other stories that I've heard, Gordy, is just the intensity of the practices. And mm-hmm. I'm going to detail this in the book. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that happened in the practices were amazing. Mm-hmm. The games, like, so one of the really cool things, I think, for the book is for each game, I have tried to talk to players, coaches, broadcasters from the opponent.
Nice.
And that's one of the reasons why I've gotten so many interviews. Mm-hmm. But one of the cool things, I think, is just hearing how just the reverence for which the opponents spoke of that team mm-hmm. and their experience of playing against that team. So that's going to be detailed in the book. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of any other like anecdotes off the top of my head. It's all kind of running together.
Sure.
This is a really cool story, which is going to be in the book, but because you're a great friend and taking the time to have me on, I'm going to tell it to you. So there was a guy named Brendan Prunty. Brendan was a sophomore at St. Joseph's that year. Mm-hmm. And Brendan went on to write for the StarLedger/NJ.com covering college basketball.
Right.
So Brendan was a huge, huge fan that season. And so anyway, Brendan and his buddies, you know, want to go play pickup basketball at the field house. Mm-hmm. So the field house has like a multi-purpose gym. Mm-hmm. And this is when St. Joe's had just gone number one. Mm-hmm. They're number one in the country. They're getting ready for the Atlantic 10 tournament. So this would be like a Monday. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic 10 tournament was like Wednesday or Thursday. So they hadn't left Philadelphia yet. So Brendan and his buddies go to play basketball in the multi-purpose room, and all the courts are taken. Mm-hmm. So they go back to the front desk. The guy's like, well, you know, the main court's open, so you can go to the main court. So Brendan and his buddies go to the main court, and so he's like, all right, well, I guess they're going to let us play on the main court. So him and his buddies are playing pickup game 5-on-5, and, you know, they're playing their pickup game, and who walks into the gym but Phil Martelli and the number one team in the country. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, shit, like, what are we going to do? Like, you know, we're on their court. Like, they're going to kick us out. And Brendan's like, yeah, I knew Phil Martelli. He's a nice guy. But he's like, I think Phil's going to tell us, hey, get the F off our court. Mm-hmm. You know, Phil Martelli looks at his watch. He's like, all right, you guys have 6 more minutes.
Good for him.
We don't have the court till 6 p.m.
Okay, that's pretty great. I kind of love that. That reminds me of the story involving our mutual friend, our late mutual friend Jack Shore, who basically ran the palestra about how Fran Dunphy, when he coached at Penn, wanted to have a practice during a Christmas break, but it was a Wednesday when Jack had his usual half court game, and so Dunph goes to walk in, and Jack goes, Dunph, what are you doing?
exactly what I thought when I heard the story, but yeah. I did not think that story could be duplicated.
I love that.
Sure was.
Yeah.
So like that's just a little example. Like
I love those stories.
There's going to be so many anecdotes about the team, about the season. Those are just a couple little anecdotes, but I'm going to tell the story in such depth and such detail that I think people are really going to enjoy reliving the story for those who knew about it and were part of it at the time. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know about the story or only have a cursory understanding of it, I think they're really going to enjoy going back and learning about it. Because honestly, Gordy, it's like, you know, one of the reasons why I want to tell this story is because at the time I felt like, you know, that team inspired a lot of people by what they did and who they were, kind of this like underdog, undersized, you know, small Catholic school who kind of captivated not just Philadelphia, but quite frankly, you know, the country, particularly down in the NCAA tournament. And I feel like that story today, you know, like, I feel like it still resonates. And we need stories that are hopeful. Mm-hmm. And like kind of my own personal journey in the last 4 or 5 months with trying to find something to find an anchor to have that daily excitement and zest for life. Mm-hmm. I feel like this story can, in some way, I hope, at least I'm hopeful that this does this. I feel like it might be able to help somebody and encourage somebody, like, hey, you can be great too. Like, you don't have to be like Kentucky. You don't have to be Duke. You don't have to have like, you don't have to be the richest person. You don't have to be the tallest, the most successful, the most talented. You know, like, look at these guys. Mm-hmm. Look what they did. And I'm going to tell like how they did it and why they did it in detail and depth. But I do hope it can have an inspiring message for someone out there. That's really kind of my hope.
That's great. To review for our listeners, that team started their season 27-0. They lost to Dayton in the Atlantic 10 tournament, but then beat Liberty, Texas Tech, and Wake Forest in NCAAs, and lost on kind of a fluky play at the end against Oklahoma State in the Elite Eight. The ball kind of bounced around, and John Lucas fired in a three to beat them. So it was a heck of a season. And as we mentioned, Jameer Nelson, who went on to play 14 years in the NBA, was their best player. And Delonte West, who's had very much of a star-crossed life since then, he went in the same draft that Jameer went in. And he's had his, you know, various issues. I'm guessing you're going to take a plunge into that as well, correct?
So again, Delonte is going to be my last attempt. Not last time, but he'll be like after Phil or even around Phil. So I talked to every player on that team except Delonte, and so I am going to make an effort to talk to him. It's probably going to be challenging, but I really would love to get in touch with him. He's obviously had some issues, and it's obviously sad, but also, like, Gordy, like, everyone, like, has their issues. Like, so, like, I'm very sympathetic and empathetic to Delonte. Mm-hmm. I certainly understand, like, you know, what I experienced losing both parents within mm-hmm. 9 months. It mm-hmm. really, you know, sent me down into a bit of a spiral. And quite frankly, you know, like, doing this helped pull me out. So, and the support that I had around me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do hope to talk to Delonte. I am mm-hmm. I'm obviously going to have to tell that as part of the story, right? Because it is mm-hmm. part of the story, but it's not the story of the book. Mm-hmm. It will be included in the book. Everything mm-hmm. that these guys have done after their St. Joseph's career mm-hmm. is going to be mentioned, but it is not necessarily going to be a focus. This isn't a Delonte West life story
mm-hmm.
book,
mm-hmm.
but it will be. It will be somehow part of the book for sure.
Okay. The last thing, because I know we're up against, about a half hour from game time, but
Gordy.
Yeah, just wanted
this
to make.
Great. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, likewise. I remember showing up for a game at the Fieldhouse once that season. I forget who they were playing, and they had like this banner out front, which I thought was kind of quaint. It said "Game Tonight," and I just thought it was like it really kind of understated exactly what was going on, what was percolating throughout that whole season. So, and I think I'm pretty sure I used that as a lead to a column at some point. And that night, I remember I tracked down Jameer's high school coach at Chester High. His name was Fred Pickett. And he was kind of back in a corner of the field house, like up on that one level. So,
yep.
So we were talking as the game's going on. And that's kind of fixed within my mind. And also, like I said, that John Lucas shot at the end of the Okie State game, that's locked within my mind too, because that was quite a team, as you said, and quite a special season. It certainly deserves more attention.
Yeah, and I think too, like, I mean, that Lucas, that whole play is just the end of that game sequence. Like, Pat Carroll hits a three-pointer with like 30 seconds left,
mm-hmm.
and the building is like delirious. Like,
mm-hmm.
it could not have gone any more like in opposite directions from complete delirium mm-hmm. and like, hey, St. Joe's going to the Final Four.
Right.
John Lucas hits a shot to complete silence, like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, the season's gonna end, and then mm-hmm. Jameer misses about an 18-footer at the buzzer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just an incredible story, mm-hmm. and just the fact that they did not win it all,
mm-hmm.
I think does not necessarily, for me anyway, take away from how great that team was,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it takes away from mm-hmm. the story. And so really looking forward. I have not talked to John Lucas. I have tried to reach out. I also have someone who might help me get in touch with his dad John Lucas, former 76ers coach. Actually, you might be able to help me do that, but I would like to talk to him. And the last time I bumped into you was at a 76ers game where I talked to Chris Paul,
mm-hmm.
which was really cool because like he remembered, like he's like, yeah, they, boom, 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 boom. Like it was 20 years ago, but he remembered it was like it was yesterday. And a lot of that's kind of the cool thing is talking to these guys is how much they remember about everything.
Yeah.
And also, Gordy, I do, before I get off here, I do want to say thank you to you because some of your stories that season helped in my research. I will obviously be crediting any that I use in the book.
I'm glad.
But you covered some of those games.
I covered
the Villanova game that season and several of the other games. And so your newspaper is in my public library archives.
Cool.
So I've been able to use your stories to help inform my knowledge that season. So,
oh, great! I'm glad I could help in any small way. Because I know I was at the games in Buffalo and also the games over in the Meadowlands. Because that was their path. So that was kind of a neat thing to watch for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine what it would have been like to be there. I remember that I was working as a sports copy editor at the Courier Post,
mm-hmm.
and I remember feeling very envious because we sent our reporter Ryan Lawrence went to cover the games in Buffalo, and Sean McCann
mm-hmm.
went to cover the games in East Rutherford. And I remember thinking, gosh, I really wish that were me there. But that my role was to edit the stories, not write them at the Courier Post. So I did edit the stories that we wrote about the games, but I did not get to cover the games, which was, you know, I would have obviously loved to have been there. But
yeah, well, it was a neat atmosphere, and it was a neat team. You know, right up to the fact that Jameer Nelson was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, a really cool cover, I might
add.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And went on, as we mentioned, went on to a really nice NBA career, played 14 years with a couple different teams, averaged over 11 points,
played the finals.
Yep, and shooting splits are fine, 44 from the field, 37 from three, 81 at the line, and like a 2.5-to-1 assist turnover ratio. So that's a hell of a career. And now he's the general manager of the Delaware Bluecoats. So good for him. That's a nice run there for Jameer.
Yeah, I mean, what a great guy. I mean, I think Phil said it right after the season ended, like, hey, this guy is not only the best basketball player I've ever coached, but the nicest person. And, you know, I think, you know, anyone who's ever encountered him would agree. And he's been very successful on the court, now appears to be headed to, I would expect him to be an NBA general manager within the next 10 to 15 years, I would think.
He's following a similar path. Elton Brand kind of followed this path too. He was general manager of the G League team and then ended up, now he's the Sixers GM. By the way, speaking of tattoos, Jameer has one on his shoulders and I forget what it said. It goes from one shoulder to the other. What did that say?
I think it says all eyes on me.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I did not ask him about that because I did have a limited time to talk to him. I had like 75 things to ask him in like 35 minutes.
Right. Yeah, that's... Because I remember that, but I forgot what it said. That's certainly something that maybe you want to visit too, because that was quite the tat.
Well, somebody told me today, Hoops Weiss told me today that there was a really good Jameer story written 5 or so years ago in the Inquirer. I did not remember seeing it, so I am going to go back. It might have been a Mike Jensen story or probably. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I got to let you go cover this game there. I really appreciate the time here, Aaron, and I wish you the best with the website, the best for the book, and I'm sure our paths will cross again here in the coming weeks. So I really appreciate it.
It's been great, Cordy. I really appreciate your time, and you know, just appreciate your friendship over the years. I always look forward to seeing you whenever I see his games, and you're always very kind to me, and I really do appreciate that, and certainly look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
Okay, take care, Aaron, and good luck with everything. Be well.
All right, all the best. Take care, Gordy.
See ya. That was Aaron Bracey, everyone, and as we mentioned, he has a website called BigFiveHoops.com, and he hopes to have a book out about St. Joe's 2003-2004 team within the next year. Probably less than within the next year, but so we wish him well on that, and we look forward to reading it. And we also wish the best to our co-host Mike Gross. Hopefully, he'll be back with us next week after that. He's had a bout with pneumonia, so hopefully, he will be back with us. And until then, I'm Gordy Jones. This is After the Buzzer, and we'll catch you down the road.